Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk, the podcast on purebred dogs. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. So I have to tell you, I'm pretty excited today. Number one, we're kicking off a brand new series of episodes called Wisdom Wednesday. And this is where you're going to find interviews with literally legends in the sport. The master breeders, top handlers, world-renowned judges. There is such a treasure trove of knowledge out there, and we want to just share that with you. And the second reason that I'm so very excited is that our debut guests are two of my absolute favorite people in dogs. Bill and Taffy McFadden reached the pinnacle of our profession because their passion drives them. We were very fortunate to be able to catch up with them at the AKC National Championship Dog Show the morning after Bill won the non-sporting group on his way to reserve best in show. Bill and Taffy McFadden, we are so excited for you guys to join us.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks for inviting us. Where's the lasagna?
That's your treat for after, Bill. You have to perform and then you get your lasagna. We're talking to Bill and Taffy about some of the amazing dogs that they've shown that have helped them establish themselves as distinctly legends in our sport. And one of the biggest things people want to talk about is what's the difference between good and great. So what makes a great dog?
What makes a great dog? I think it's kind of intangible because some great dogs are great because of their character. You know, they're good dogs. And what elevates them is their character and their presence and a magnetism that, you know, people are drawn to them.
Showmanship.
Yeah, it's showmanship, but some dogs just literally suck people in. I'm talking as a handler, not as a breeder, but as a dog, as a performance. There are some dogs that really suck people in, and there are other dogs that are just as good that don't have that quality, that it factor. And it's true in people, too. You know, there's athletes and actors and singers that have that where you're drawn to them. They may not be technically as good as some of their peers, but they have that quality that makes you want to listen to them or be them or sleep with them.
Sleep with them? Seriously? I always sleep with my top specials, so it's not a problem. Under the covers, all snoozy. No, I agree. I think that the it factor has been used several times on describing a dog that's out there that commands the attention of not only the judge, but all the spectators and usually all the other handlers. You know, they aspire to replicate that dog's energy and presence. And there can be some really great dogs out there that are flat show dogs, and there can be some good dogs that just ooze that personality, and they're foolers sometimes.
Speaking of great dogs, let's talk about some of your great dogs. Everybody always wants to talk about Mick. He was a personal favorite of mine. I happened to be showing a terrier at the same time. And I mean, wow. Talk about bow to your idol. Yeah. He definitely had that. And I remember watching him at the garden that year that he kind of screwed himself.
Yeah, it was more than 1 year. Well, Mick at the garden, he thought everybody was there to see him. You know, there's so much energy and electricity in that building. And he was like, oh my God, they all came at one time to see me. And that was a really difficult place to show him because he just literally was out of his mind. And it just, that was a hard place to show him. Yeah, he was a pretty good dog.
Yeah, he was a pretty good dog. So legitimately, he had that it factor that you were talking about.
He did. He did. The breeder, when I went to see him at his house, and Mick came into the living room and kind of gave me the once over, the way the breeder described him was it was like living with Clark Gable. He just, this dog with a look could, you know, either make you love him or fear him or whatever. He just had that quality. And some of that is not anything that you can do. You know, if they have it, you learn to work around it or try to channel it. And it's the way dogs are raised is important, but I don't think you can raise a dog to be that. It's either that or it's not. It's just the way it is. I mean, there's only one Honey Boo Boo, allegedly.
Well, thank God. Taffy, one of my favorite dogs of yours was the giant schnauzer, Spirit, right? And she had a little bit of that, didn't she?
She did. And you know, it's funny, as a young dog, she didn't really have that presence. I mean, she may have had it deep down, but she walked on the first fairgrounds and kind of looked around and didn't really think it was a thing for her. But in true giant schnauzer fat, you know, the way they go, she grew into it. And she could read a person to the point of whether they appreciated her quality or if they didn't believe in her, she knew it. And she'd size them up and she'd perform differently for those people. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, we went through a communicator and I kept thinking, why is she not standing still for this one person? And the communicator said, Spirit says that person does not appreciate her and had better learn to.
I think that the Taffy and Spirit, there was a difference. I don't think Spirit had the it factor. I think they had the it factor. There was such a partnership and so many people independently referred to it as like they were dancing together. And that's a different quality than a dog that's just drawn it. The partnership was the it factor.
Okay, that just gave me chills.
It's making me cry.
So over the course of your careers, there's always the famous ones, right? But there's also the favorite ones. And they aren't always the same.
I had a Pooley bitch that is one of my favorite ones I ever showed, bred by the same lady who bred Preston, the top dog this year. She just was pure joy to show. I just loved every minute of her. She was so much fun. And then another one was a Bouvier bitch. And neither one of them had huge careers. They both won nationals, but they weren't like bazillion best in show dogs. But they both, I loved them. They were so much fun to show. And then for some reason, there's a string of Westie bitches, and I couldn't even come up with all their names. They all were, you know, maybe best in show winners and had reasonable careers, but they just, I don't know, I just clicked with them. And none of those had anywhere near the success of some of my other dogs, but I just really enjoyed those.
I think my all-time favorite was the English Setter Kid. He just... Again, you know, the difference between Bill and I, our careers, I always seem to have the ones that needed to be kind of coaxed along and given courage. My Bedlington needed courage. My English Setter needed courage. The Greyhound, the Deerhound, they all needed courage, and they kind of leaned on me, where Bill tended to get his giant schnauzer bitch, Tristan, was just like hell-bent for election. Mick, the Dandy, had a presence. Like, he just walked in there and commanded the ring. I always seemed to have ones that I kind of had to noodle into thinking that they were big and tough. The English Setter dog was that, the kid dog. And the Bedlington, I loved that dog. And he was one that I had to convince that the sun was going to come out tomorrow. So, and I think I liked that. I'm drawn to that.
They respond to you because you give them the strength, Taffy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So now... We talked about his handlers, but let's also talk about his breeders. I think sometimes people forget the best handlers, most of us started as breeders. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that and what handlers who are also breeders bring to the profession and to the sport.
Well, my original breed through my sister was English Setters, and I probably bred 3 or 4 litters and enjoyed them, but it just never really clicked for me. And so I fell madly in love with Shih Tzus and through an assistant and Havanese, and have actually had quite good success with both breeds. It gives you a new perspective of what breeders have to go through. You know, you have this beautiful dog and this beautiful bitch, and in all probability, you should get something in the litter that's going to work out. And that doesn't always occur. you have an accidental breeding where your best friend forgot to close the gate and something happens and you get the best puppy you've ever seen in your life and you would never have done that breeding. So my hat's off to the breeders because it's not an easy thing. It is trial and error. Everything looks good, genetics, trying to make the perfect match. And I think I will never be a professional breeder because it is so hard and such a long situation to get the end result that you want, or close to the end result that you want. So I'm not as devout a breeder as my husband is. He lives, breathes, and eats wire fox terriers.
And
I always tell him that the pecking order is wire fox terriers, Starbucks, Pilates, possibly me, maybe number four, if I'm lucky.
Movies.
Damn, move down to five. All right. So, well, anyway, at least I'm in the top 50. I don't consider myself truly a breeder like Bill is. You know, I'm more of a raise the puppies, whelp the litters. He's the mastermind.
That's my favorite part about dogs is breeding. And probably I would have found another way to make more money. But this is a way I can do my breeding and it all gets incorporated together. But that's my favorite thing. I love master breeders. I love talking to people that have a plan.
Generations down
for generations and particularly ones that have created or stamped a type. You don't have it as much anymore because people can't have as many dogs as they at one time could have. And I miss the days when you would say you were going to breed to whatever kennel because you wanted to improve your heads, you wanted to get a star-kissed head or whatever the kennel name was. I think that's made it a lot more difficult to breed dogs because what's happened is a lot of the pedigree, everybody has basically similar pedigrees. We've all bred to the dog that is producing well, whether they are related to us or not. So all of our pedigrees are relatively similar, which makes it a lot harder to have like a breakout line or a dog that can significantly make a difference because, you know, we all have cottage cheese and you can put pineapple in it, put a little something else in it, but it's still cottage cheese.
Lasagna.
Yeah. I don't like cottage cheese in my lasagna.
And I agree with you, Bill. I really think the popular sire has always been there.
Right.
But it's more common now.
Mm-hmm. And worldwide.
And in your breed, and wire fox, I don't know, is that a breed that you can still find pockets sort of singularity?
So you're not as likely to be able to find a dog in Mozambique and bring it over and surprise everybody. There's a lot of good things that have happened because the world's become smaller, but I also think it's harder to breed because we all have pretty much the same stuff.
Okay, all right. So we were having a conversation, Taffy and I, about this. So how does it work for you? I mean, being a handler and being a breeder. Taffy said, you're not allowed to bring your wire fox terrier. So how do you make that work?
Well, you know, I have goals that I haven't reached yet, but because I'd seen other handlers mishandle being a breeder and a handler, you know, what happens is as a breeder, like I like to show my dogs from bred by, but if I have a client's dog entered and open, I'm not going to show a dog in bred by that I don't think is pretty spectacular.
It's a conflict of interest.
So early on, I decided, okay, first I didn't show dogs for any wire people. And then I decided, we're supposed to be making a living. So then I started for a few select people who know me as a breeder and respect that there are some shows that I want to show my own dogs and that I will be honest with them and tell them, sorry, this is for my dogs, this show. I'm sorry. But I really have never campaigned one of my own dogs. I mean, I would like to, and I still have a couple years in me, so I might, but I've never done that. So I've bred a lot of best in show winners. I've bred national specialty winners and stuff, but
all over the world.
I'm not in the record books as, like, you're not going to see me as one of the top. And they're pretty lofty records in that breed. You know, I mean, it's a breed that has had lots of success, but I still find it, this is a challenging breed and still working on the little puzzle pieces and gives me something to occupy my mind.
Okay, with all of that now going forward, in this sport, I think we find ourselves a little bit challenged, right? We're looking for solutions for some of the things that we see in this sport. We're seeing conflicts with owner handlers and professional handlers. We're seeing fewer people. What kind of ideas or suggestions or recommendations do you have for people that are frustrated?
I really think that there's a pocket of this business that has not been made more important, and that's the breeders. I just feel that this is initially a sport where we are comparing our breeding stock. If Mr. Jones has a great pointer, and Mr. Smith has a great pointer bitch. The whole purpose of it is to make the best next generation. I don't feel that we are showcasing our breeders nearly enough. And as a handler, we are at the mercy of these breeders to be able to produce the next great one and to be able to be honored enough to show it. I have all the respect for the American Kennel Club and their owner-handler series. I understand that it does help encourage other people to show their own dogs. And I know as a handler, Bill and I are both very supportive of people that show their own dogs. And we'll give hints out and tips. And we're always helping the new people. You know, that's what we're here for. But I really feel that there should be more breeder showcases because those are outstanding things to watch. When a breeder can walk in, there's a specific person up in the Pacific Northwest that walked in to my ring when I had the honor of judging the showcase with a generation after generation. One of the dogs was 15 years old. One of them was 7 and one of them was 3. And I couldn't believe that 15-year-old dog could have walked in any one of those groups today and won that group. It was the most amazing thing. And this person can stamp that breed consecutively, line after line after line. And those are the people that we need to make the next Julie Gazow, the next whomever, in whatever breed it is. And we are just letting that fall. We're not pushing the breeders. And I don't profess to be a breeder, but I profess to be a handler with a very good eye. And we need more of those people producing whatever breed it is.
Just generally, I think that we all need to put on our positivity caps as opposed to our negativity caps, because the sky's been falling for as long as I've been in dogs. You know, every generation is bemoaning the next generation, or that the great people are all dead or whatever. I think that there is amazing talent. I think there's amazing young people, young breeders, young handlers, young veterinarians. There's people out there. We need to encourage them. We need to empower them, because many of them are intimidated by handlers or by judges, by the AKC. This should not be, intimidation should not enter into it. There should be a place for thirsty people to get a drink at any time. I'm very dismayed by, there's a real negative vein of, you know, in the intranet about handlers, because I am one. I'm offended by it, because the handlers I know are hardworking, giving. People are never afraid to ask us to donate handling services or grooming or handling lessons, and we all do it. Yet we're the first person castigated. It's the handler's fault that the sport's falling apart. And there are exceptions. You know, there are instances, there are inequities. There are handlers that have won a lot that maybe didn't always deserve to. But for the most part, the core of our brotherhood of handlers are good people that work way too hard for way too little money and give, give, give. And I really don't like that negative opinion that people have of them. And yes, those were tears in my eyes, but then I thought of lasagna.
Okay. Just have a couple more questions. I think both of those are really important things that we can do. And I think just to sort of sum up the whole package moving forward, so would you encourage the owner handler to come and talk to any handler?
Definitely, definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't know a handler that wouldn't. They have to be respectful of our time. I think the worst thing that happens is people come to a dog show and get a bad experience because they ask you, when you're walking in the ring in 3 minutes, a question where your focus is on your dog, and maybe it's a dog that, as Taffy says, needs courage or whatever, and you know, you've built your little bubble getting ready to go in, and somebody takes a pin and pops your bubble. So making sure that you ask at appropriate time. I would recommend leeching on to a handler, offering, you know, when I'm not showing my Chihuahua, I will help you do anything. I just want to learn, make yourself available, become part of their family. You don't have to want to be a handler, but you can learn so much about dogs in general. And there's not a handler on the planet that couldn't use an extra hand or a set of eyes or ears and would gladly take you into their fold and help you learn and build your dog knowledge.
And I also think as a handler, we get excited with new blood, new eyes.
New talent.
New talent. You know, it's fun to see them take the baby steps and then start taking leaps. It's really fun. Bill and I do a handling class, and trust me, there's nothing cooler than having them lay the ribbons out on the table when we come the next week after a dog show and they're like, look what we did. You know, and it may be their very first blue ribbon, or it could be best of winners at a big specialty. That is just the best feeling, to know that somebody else has found the passion that we feel about this business. There's nothing has been harder in my life than when I was tired of going to dog shows, because this is a really difficult thing to maintain sanity in, because you very little sleep, hard work, lousy food, you know, blah, blah, blah. No lasagna. But when somebody takes it away from you because of a health issue or economically, or, you know, for some reason that it gets taken away from you, I have never felt such a burning need to get back, because I love it and it's in my blood, and you can watch new people get the fever, and that's so fun. That makes you really believe that this business is gonna flourish,
that we haven't wasted our lives.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there are days when, you know, usually Monday mornings.
All right, well, thank you so much. Congratulations, Bill, winner of the non-sporting group last night with the Bichon Frise. We are wishing you the very best of luck tonight, and we'll be there cheering you on.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was good talking.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.